This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Tahitian culture is really vibrant. It always has been. There's a wealth of Tahitian material in museums, some 11,000 objects, across the world. These are the result of exchanges between islanders and Europeans since 1767. The range of objects goes from the ceremonial, and the martial, to the everyday, reflecting deep changes over time as new materials and new ideas were brought in by outsiders. But all these things that entered museums, primarily in the 18th and 19th centuries, have been largely sitting on storehouse shelves, ever since. Most of the Tahitian objects in international museums have never been studied, or published, or visited, let alone exhibited. Few Tahitians know what is out there. Many islanders now are trying to revive traditions and practices forcibly banned 150 years ago by the Christian Church and by the French colonial government. There is an increasing moral imperative for museums to open up the cultural patrimony that they hold. I've recently surveyed world museums to see what is held from Tahiti and the other Society Islands and see what the institutions have done with those objects. For the most part, museums with these collections, from St. Petersburg to St. Louis, from Osaka to Otago, have rarely displayed them. Their galleries usually contain no indication that Tahiti or its neighbouring islands exist at all. When Tahiti does appear, it is generally without any sense of the island's cultural vibrancy. No context is provided, no sense of the people who created the objects, or the changes they have made, or the world that they live in now. Museums and art galleries often present Tahitians and other Pacific Islanders as if they are perpetually stuck in the 18th century. Tahiti once occupied a dynamic place at the centre of European debates about the nature of human society. Descriptions of the islanders' rituals and sexual practices were brought back by voyagers, and visits from the islanders themselves captured the public imagination with a frisson that meant that the islanders were talked about, written about, and their works collected, traded, and viewed at exhibitions throughout the Enlightenment era. For Europe, Tahiti was the first and quintessential exotic Pacific island. By the mid-19th century, once missionaries, colonists, and traders had rushed to the islands, Westerners found the uniquely romantic appeal of the island had leached away. It fell out of the public view. It is unfortunate that now Western conceptions of the island have been shaped not by presentations of the islanders' rich culture, but by books, exhibitions and movies about famous Europeans who have stopped there. Tahiti is seen as a place of palm trees with some vague association with Gauguin, Captain Cook and Bligh's mutiny. Or was it Mel Gibson's mutiny? This paper is an overview of how one culture is being collected and represented by the West. My key point is that absences in museum cases have political implications. I'm hoping to convince you that this island in the middle of the Pacific can be relevant to our own thinking about the responsibilities of museums and the implications of how we use or ignore the collections in our care. I'll give you a quick overview of the phases of collecting and exhibiting Tahiti. Does it show you where Tahiti is, particularly within the Society Islands there? Before suggesting ways forward for reconnecting collections to communities and reinvigorating them for a broader audience. As Ranganui Walker, a Maori anthropologist, has said, I quote, "If taonga, cultural treasures, are not to be reduced to mere museum pieces, then ways and means must be devised of relating them to the living." This is something that the curators at the National Museum of Australia know well and already address in every stage of their curation of exhibitions. Here, and across Australia, however, there is no general public recognition of what political, economic or environmental issues are currently facing many Pacific Islanders, despite the entwined stories of our two regions, or the number of islanders living here, or the long-term impact of Australian policy on the islands. Many people would have trouble identifying where the islands are, let alone what goes on there. Museums could be broadening these horizons. So just for a bit of a historical overview. Since Europeans started visiting Tahiti in 1767, the mutual collecting of each other's material culture has been enthusiastic. When British, French and Spanish voyagers visited the island, the indigenous people of the Society Islands, the Mauhi, were keen to trade away their own goods and their fresh food and the company of women to secure the Europeans' exotic and useful glassware, metal tools, woven cloth and scissors. While some of these commodities were used, others were actually just obtained for the purpose of keeping them for their own sake, so they were just being collected by the islanders. The islanders could easily trade away everyday tools such as adzes that were being replaced by European versions made in iron. And commoners could remake fish hooks and pounders. It is these everyday tools that are most common in museum collections now. The more elite items belonging to Tahitian chiefs and priests were given or traded away more carefully, and only to those on a ship who could make good on the exchange, the captains and the officers. Museum collections reflect these economies. Honolulu's Bishop Museum, for instance, of its 544 objects from the Society Islands, has 181 Tahitian adze blades, 84 pounders, 31 fishing hooks, and only 4 to'o, the sacred figures for containing a god. And sorry, they don't have any pictures on their database, so I've just used yet another British Museum image. In the first voyaging phase of European collecting, seamen brought back objects as souvenirs, gifts, and for sale. They were enthusiastic audiences for objects brought back by Captain Cook at the Leverian Museum in London and at the British Museum. While the public was genuinely interested in finding out about the new peoples being discovered, these larger museums had different agendas and displayed the extraordinary, completely unfamiliar objects like the mourner's costume you saw at the beginning, without any explanation of what they were, just a label proclaiming their connection to Cook or Joseph Banks. Each phase of representing the Pacific has had impacts on how the public understand and interact with the islands. The next phase of representing Tahiti trumpeted the civilized progress being made on the island. From the mid-19th century, sacred figures were confiscated or given up by chiefs, such as Pomare II, when they finally converted, often for political reasons, and they sent idols, in inverted commas, back to London to be shown at the Missionary Museum as trophies of success and to garner more support for the cause. Then colonial exhibitions from the 1850s showcased not just the industry and progress of each nation, but their expanding colonies. They displayed plantation commodities and pointed out that islanders now used our ceramic and glass. The Paris Exposition of 1889, inspired by the pseudo-anthropological shows of indigenous peoples being toured around Europe, installed mocked-up villages, including a Tahitian village, with islanders going about their supposed everyday life for the education and entertainment of visitors. Villages such as this were soon included in the American World Fairs, providing rather unnerving viewing for some, I think. The expositions inspired a broader range of people to continue the pursuit of looking at other cultures in ethnographic displays. Museums gained broader audiences. Meanwhile, in Tahiti, traditional practices, carving for rituals or for chiefs, tattooing or travelling between islands, had been forced to a halt by the church and colonial government in favour of more controllable and profitable pursuits. So many parts of material culture just stopped being produced. The appeal of the islands was later revived in the visual media of tourism, and islanders responded to the new type of collectors with suitable carvings and models, such as model canoes. From the late 19th century, exhibition representations followed the new hierarchical ethnography of race. Polynesian culture was shown in the 1940s as an essentialised primitive art. By the mid-century, primitivism started to give way, and under the influence of cultural anthropology, curators were more likely to approach their collections as windows into cultures. In many museums and art galleries, both from the 1970s and now, the same old, timeless objects from non-Western cultures have tended to be displayed without any imagery to give a sense of the people who created them. This presented stasis is not actually borne out by the institution's collections, which usually include less traditional objects illustrating the island's history and creative adaptations beyond the early 19th century. A few museums are collecting contemporary Tahitian arts, not just the British Museum, but also Te Papa, the Queensland Art Gallery, the Burke Museum in Washington. And I know this because I've recently, in my survey of museums around the world, I was able to find out what these museums held from Tahiti, but also from Moorea, Raiatea, Huahine, Bora Bora and Maupiti. I'll just show you a graph by my husband, Mark Gunning, who I thank for not just the maps, but also this splendid graph. And as you can see here, the countries holding Society Islands objects are shown with the number of objects in blue, and below the line, the number of institutions in each country shown in green. I found that there are at least 11,270 objects from the Society Islands in at least 101 institutions around the world. There are likely more. This is a work in progress. I was surprised and heartened to discover that most objects are in the Pacific itself, as you can see here. Neighbouring museums in the settler communities in Hawaii and in New Zealand. Where's my mouse gone? Anyway, next to the big line there is New Zealand. And of the 11,000 world total, 7,000 are in Tahiti itself, at the Musée de Tahiti et des Îles. Now, before I show you a picture of the Musée de Tahiti et des Îles, I'll just show you that the other big line there is from the UK. See at the far end there. Sorry, I can't get my mouse to... Yes, there we are. From the UK, and you can see that the British have always been consummate collectors, and they've had really the longest association with the islands. So the Musée de Tahiti et des Îles has a very large collection. I think this is partly because the French colonists established a museum very early for the Pacific in 1917, not in this building, in a different building. But it can also be argued that Tahitians already had a comparable tradition of keeping treasured objects in a Whare'ia Manaha, a sacred treasure house. And just another shot of the museum. And Whare'ia Manaha is now part of the museum's name, which recognises that earlier connection. The Musée de Tahiti has had support and donations of objects from not just the resident French, Chinese and other ethnic groups, but also from Indigenous Tahitians. Today, some Tahitians will leave potent old spirit figures at the Musée to get them safely away from the home. Students at the local Art and Crafts College draw on objects there as models, and all school children go through there at least once. While some of the old clichés do still crop up, perhaps for the benefit of tourists, the Musée has had an effective contemporary collecting program and has been successful at securing the return of a range of important objects from overseas by donation and auction purchases. Given that Australia's closest connection to Tahiti was through Sydney traders who were gathering pork and other commodities rather than artefacts, it is not surprising that there are apparently just over 100 Tahitian objects here in Australia. And the majority of these are at the Australian Museum in Sydney, where the strongest trade connections were. The National Museum of Australia does have a good Pacific collection, and it is one that delineates its colonial connections particularly clearly. The collection includes 5,000 objects from Australia's former colony, Papua New Guinea, while it has only a single Tahitian Tapabita. While large museums have online catalogues, the British Museum, the K. Bronlea, Smithsonian and Te Papa, it is otherwise hard to find records of worldwide collections electronically or in print. I was able to trace many of them only by emailing curators directly and hoping that they would find time to investigate their collections for me. And sometimes this was only possible because I had their business card. It would have been very hard for someone in the islands without museum connections and without a reliable internet connection to have carried out the same research. Museums are generally daunting places for those not part of the culture that created them. Most museums are implicitly authoritarian, something which is embodied in their very structure. Any islanders wishing to visit collections in these institutions need to get past this kind of frontage. Finding or gaining access to their cultural heritage is the next challenge. When this kind of visit does happen, as anyone working in museums knows, it is immensely rewarding for both the institution and the visitor. The flow of information and inspiration is two-way. Collaborations between source communities and museums provide the best opportunity for making islanders feel at home in the museum. And as Howard pointed out this morning, it's the best way forward for creating exhibitions that convey issues that matter and of relating cultural treasures to the living. Projects such as the Pacifica Styles exhibition and art program in Cambridge involved artists from the outset and included the artists' voices, both literally and in audio recordings, at every stage of the process. Exhibitions such as Stephen Hooper's Polynesian Encounters, I'm almost done, and the British Museum's Power and Taboo in 2006, both presented primarily historic material, but brought their subject to life through imagery, vibrant performances, ceremonies, conferences, artists in residence, and talks provided by local Polynesian communities. And as Charlotte showed us this morning, reconstructions can be incredibly effective. And the only dedicated... Oh, sorry, it's just another image there of a performance. The only dedicated Tahitian exhibition outside of Tahiti is a reconstruction at the Field Museum in Chicago, part of their Pacific Travelers exhibition. They've reconstructed Papeete's market in their Pacific Gallery. And this is some pictures of the market that I took earlier this month. Based on detailed research, one side of the Marché building has been recreated full-size with the road around it, lined with its multicultural food shops, videos of discussions with Papeete inhabitants, and it allows the visitor, for once, to gather a comprehensive sense of life in Tahiti as it is lived now. The melange of cultures, the urban face of things, the global commodities, and the continuation of old ways of doing some things, like preparing food, these things are all apparent simply by walking through the reconstruction. Dioramas and reconstructions are, of course, very resource-intensive and highly mediated interpretations. For an audience who knows little, if anything, of Tahiti, it will usually take more than a bland presentation of a pounder on a pedestal to make a difference. In conclusion, ethnographic museums around the world are now generally trying to become more accessible to their local audiences and source communities. In addition to increasing collaborations, museums could usefully improve access through loans programs, more online databases, things like commissions and purchases from practitioners as a way to invigorate collections in which the selection of material is guided by local values rather than the curators. It is unlikely that Australian museums will make changes anytime soon to their minimal coverage of Pacific cultures, but exhibitions that open up Pacific cultures to a broader audience, such as Waka Moana coming to the National Museum of Australia from June to October this year, and the proposed exhibition Look Look Again on contemporary Papua New Guinea art, are ideal vehicles. Museums around the world hold the legacy of their Enlightenment and colonial pasts, the material results of their engagements with islanders. They hold a great potential for providing ways for people around the world to recognise and connect to the islands, and for islanders to connect to their heritage in ways that are becoming increasingly important. Thank you.
We perhaps have time for one quick question. We're running a little bit
sorry.
Over.
Sorry.
It's okay. Up the top there.
Hi. Hi, Kylie.
Microphone's on your way. Recordings. No. We're making a recording.
I'll whisper seductively then. Kylie Message from the ANU. Thanks, Jenny. That was really fascinating. I'm interested to know more about the collections that are held in the Pacific region. Mm. In particular, I'm interested to know when the collections were acquired and whether there has been a vast increase in contemporary collecting in the last couple of decades that has kind of accounted for the majority of collections being held in this region.
Thanks. Because they're settler communities, collections did actually start quite early in both Hawaii and in New Zealand, but as well in, as I've said, in Tahiti. So those collections did begin from about the 19th century, when there was large European populations in those places with their culture of collecting that came along with them, but. Because the museums in Hawaii and Tahiti and New Zealand are really connected to what's happening locally, their contemporary collecting programs are really active and very positive. And they've got a lot of support from people from Tahiti who are living in each of those places. So they're getting really interesting material all the time, really. And so although they do have good, strong collections historically, they've also got good contemporary collections too.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.